It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Giga Ohm's Matthew Ingram joins Jeff Jarvis and me to talk about the media, Google, and more. Stay tuned. This Week in Google's coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 228, recorded December 11th, 2013. Are you a robot? This Week in Google is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is the reliable domain name registration and management service that's simple, honest, and easy to use for exceptional customer support and 10% off your new domain name. Go to hover.com/twig and use the offer code TWIG. And by Jira, an Atlassian product. Jira is the project management solution for teams planning, building, and launching great products. To learn more about Jira and try it free for 30 days, visit atlassian.com/twig. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all of your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show that covers Google, the cloud, the Googleverse, the Twitter, the Facebook, and all that jazz. Gina Trapani, as you know, has the month of December off as she relocates to the East Coast. I guess she's going in a Conestoga wagon. I don't know why it takes 4 weeks, but that's the way it is. We miss her. We will have her back January. But meanwhile, still got Jeff. Jeff Jarvis,
you
professor of journalism.
Can't get rid of me. I'm like a bad cold.
Better not get rid of you.
Sticking around.
Jeff, in fact, I welcome this opportunity to spend a little time with Jeff because he's one of the smartest guys I know. And Gina just slows us down with, like, facts. So... Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism, City University of New York. He's the author of Public Parts, a great book about living in public and privacy. Also many other things, including Gutenberg the Geek, the single from Amazon, which is now an audiobook read by Jeffrey. And many people don't know, but you for many years were a television critic.
Indeed I was. TV critic and people. A TV guide and people.
Yeah. And you worked for The Examiner, right?
Yes.
In San Francisco?
I had a column way back in the day called Take Five.
That's what I read religiously. And I've been a Jeff Jarvis fan since then, since Take Five.
Yeah. Kind. You're always too kind.
No, I loved it. The Examiner now is, I don't know what. It's like a free weekly or something. It's not.
Well,
it's
what
terrible.
Newspaper isn't a poor, thin, miserable shell of itself?
But the Hearst Corporation, which ran, it was really great. Like many towns, a two-paper town. They had the morning paper and your afternoon paper. The Hearst Corporation ran The Examiner. It was William Randolph Hearst's first newspaper, I think, or one of his first. Mm-hmm. And then the DeYoung family ran the San Francisco Chronicle. And then what happened was, you know, like most cities, you couldn't support two newspapers. So the Hearsts bought the Chronicle. The DeYoung family retired. And they said, well, we'll just give up The Examiner and we'll run the Chronicle. So in a way, The Examiner continues name, just changed its name.
Yeah, that's all.
Think of it that way.
Freebie.
So, Jeff, lots of stories, but one that is really applicable to media coverage and frankly makes me, every time these things happen, wipe my brow. There but for the grace of God, a Google shuttle in San Francisco blocked by protesters, mostly because San Francisco's gotten very expensive and there are a lot of people who feel that it's the fault of all these dot-com millionaires, Google and Apple and everybody else living there. And these companies, all the big companies, Yahoo, Google, and Apple, all have their special buses. And these buses use public bus stops. So protesters blocked this private shuttle saying it's not right. You shouldn't be able to use the public bus stops without paying fees. The San Francisco Displacement and Neighborhood Impact Agency, they call themselves. And a guy gets off or is – and anyway, they're surrounded by television cameras. And a guy claiming to be a Google employee starts shouting at them. Saying, hey, you know, get a job. You know, all the things you'd expect an insensitive rich guy to do. Do you want to? Shall we watch the little bit of the? This is from the San Francisco Bay Guardian. Here is the. You can't hear me, can you? Oh, you can't.
Look, I've been here for 6 months, okay? I live around the corner. I don't need to tell you anything, okay? Look, I can pay my rent. Can you pay your rent?
Can you pay your rent?
Well, then you know what? Why don't you go to a city where you can't afford it?
Why don't you go to a city where you can afford it? Turns out it's all staged. This guy's a labor labor leader. The whole thing is staged. The whole thing is fake. And, of course, a lot of news organizations got bit by it. And I always, when I look at something like this, I go, oh, God, there but for the grace of God go I. How do you avoid getting bit by something that's so blatantly a fake?
I mean, well, you try to cover the story the way it is. What I tweeted about this whole incident was, I'm sorry, but this is the reason why I'm glad I am not in San Francisco anymore. it's the obvious... proto-liberal, and I mind you, I'm a Democrat, I'm a liberal, but I get sick of fellow liberals because they can really be pains in the butt. And what do you expect these people to do, right? So okay, that's fine. Kill all the buses. Every employee is going to drive a Mercedes from San Francisco to Mountain View now.
Oh, that's good.
And they're all going to have to park on the street. You're going to fight with them for parking spots.
Yeah.
But you know, what the heck? You don't want the buses? You don't like the buses? That's fine. Or suddenly, they're all going to leave. Google's going to pick up and go to another city, and you're going to watch the real estate places drop. Okay, maybe that's what you want, but that's not good for the economy. They're going to take the jobs away with them. You want that? What is it you really want? Why is it you just complaining somebody's making money? Now, there are issues to the new tech 1% that I think we have to deal with. There is a new creation of wealth in the tech industry that they've got to deal with responsibly. But in this case, it's your neighbors who have a job somewhere else. They'd rather live in San Francisco than Mountain View. And they are using a form of public transportation to get there and not clogging up the streets and not clogging up the roadways on the way to the peninsula. And I don't see anything wrong with that. And so it's just one of these stupid things that tries to make nothing into a cause. And that pisses me off. So from that level right there, you say, we TV news cameras are getting gamed at that level. If you even go out and cover this crap. And then you play along with the next level of being gamed, which is this guy making this stuff up. Beware.
Within an hour of the original post, The Guardian learned that the guy was not an actual Google employee, even though they ran the story at first as if he was. But Max Bell Alper, who is a union organizer with Unite Here Local 2850, they asked him, why did you do that? And he said, this is a political theater to demonstrate what's happening in the city. It's more than just the bus. These are enormous corporations that are investing in this community. These companies like Google should be proud of where they're from and invest in their communities. I'm confused.
He's saying, don't invest in Mountain View,
invest in San Francisco. I guess Google has an office in San Francisco.
They should help pay for the bus shelters.
Ah. Well, they do, because the taxes that...
They pay taxes.
They pay taxes. Just as much as Max Alper paid for the bus shelter. He didn't pay for the... Yeah. He didn't give the city of San Francisco money to use the bus shelter. When asked if he intended to deceive media, he said, people are talking all over the country about what's happening in San Francisco. That's the debate we need to have here. The more we talk about it, the more we think about it, the more we're going to see tech companies need to contribute. He didn't respond. In other words, whether he intentionally deceived the media. He did say he didn't intend to engage in theater before going to the protest, but when he was there, he made the decision spontaneously to stage the argument. I got to point out, the protesters were wearing, as you saw in that video, were wearing, reflective vests. He wasn't.
No.
I don't think it was that spontaneous. No. He did not, when asked repeatedly by media who he was, and then they asked to talk to him, he did not. I mean, it was pretty obvious.
It's a lie. Plain out and simple.
Yeah.
But it plays to the weakness of TV news. You know, I want to start writing about that topic, and I was going to talk to you, Leo, about this, is we need to reinvent television news. Right? We're assuming that it has to operate in its old stupid orthodoxies, and we know what they are. We know what they are. Covering fires, being taken in by PR events like this. What's wrong with TV news and how do we reinvent it? And if I look at new models, when I speak to companies, I've spoken to video, TV news companies around the world, when they come in and say, oh, what's hot in New York? And I always bring you up, Leo. I always, always show them Twig. And I show them this magnificent absurdity you've created.
It is absurd. I'll give you that.
It is. But 100 to 250,000 people we'll sit here for an hour and a half. I just loved it on the chat room beforehand. Steve went on. Steve, God bless him, who can talk security 24 hours, said, Leo, it's already been 100 minutes. You know, isn't this a little long?
Over a new leaf. I want to be clear about this, Jeff. Two-hour security nows were the norm until recently.
Yeah,
so.
So then somebody in the chat room complained and said, no, security now should be 2.5 to 3 hours.
We should be all day.
Yeah, so they'll just take as much of you as they can get versus, you know, Vine. So you get everything from 6 minutes to 600 minutes.
6 seconds,
Or 6 seconds, thank you. And everything in between, and TV can be rethought. But this is just silly story is an example of TV news assignment desk taking up, you know, whatever flackery is sent their way, sent in cameras, as if it's real news when it's just made up BS.
Well, and by the way, I think that they, by doing that, do a disservice to the story. So, yes. I mean, there are all sorts of things that media does wrong, the he said, she said kind of coverage that CNN is espousing. But also, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. And news has always done this. The more yelling there is, the more controversy, the more visceral and emotional it is. Everybody knows this. That's why YouTube. I remember talking to Tim Street, who's a great video maker. He did a lecture on how to become a viral video. He said, the more emotions you can engage in a shorter amount of time, the more likely you are to get viral. If you can make people laugh and cry and be scared and jump for joy, you're going to be huge. And that's local television news has known that for years. What's unfortunately, I think, anathema to television is the idea of abstract ideas you can't illustrate with pictures. It's so hard to do because people have to sit there and watch people like us talk and think. And I think there's legitimate, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, the city of San Francisco is becoming gentrified. That means...
It's been gentrified for years and years and years and years. When I was there, I couldn't afford an apartment.
There are people in the Mission District, which is a beautiful district, where a lot of low-income people live. And they're being evicted and forced out now because it also happens to be a very popular place for the yuppies. Do we still call them yuppies? For the yuppies to move in.
I think we call them Googlers now.
Now they're Googlers. Dinks, but dual income,
the
no
same,
kids.
The same point, right in the center of San Francisco, in the center of, you know, the center of the universe, you go through the Tenderloin, and it's still the Tenderloin.
Hey, you could still shoot up in the Tenderloin on the street, and nobody will bug you.
Yeah.
So there are places to stay. I do feel a little bit bad for people who have been living in San Francisco. And one of the points these guys make is that San Francisco has always been a very diverse and interesting culturally. And now it's getting more uniform. It's just a bunch of nerds.
Of guys in vests.
Guys of hipsters. Yes. Wow. That's okay. Eat your heart out, Chipotle. Lisa just brought me lunch. Is that, what the hell is that? Is that a macho burrito?
That's the medium.
That's the medium.
Jesus. Let's get an overhead shot of that, please.
Well, you know, what's nice is it kind of looks like the Mexican flag. Wait a minute, where's the microphone? Where's the camera? It could be the Mexican flag. I'm going to eat the Mexican flag. And this, my friends, is why you can't get an apartment in San Francisco.
You can't fit.
Actually, the same thing's happened in Petaluma. Petaluma Hotel, which is across the street here, was a residence hotel. That means low-income, poor people, older people were living there cheaply. And somebody bought it. And it's turning into an actual hotel and kicking them out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's terrible. So I do think that there's an issue, a societal issue. I don't know what the answer is because we live in a free market economy. You can only go so far.
Mad at the workers who are going to their job, you know, en masse rather than individual cars and bringing
that's
money
the wrong,
to the economy. That's the wrong way to go. They're not the enemy. Your neighbor is not the enemy in this case.
Yeah. Now more news from Glenn Greenwald. As we continue to leak out more and more about the NSA, the latest is the NSA uses Google, this comes from the Washington Post, uses Google cookies to pinpoint targets for hacking. They're secretly riding on top of cookies.
They're anonymized. They're not people, but I guess it helps them string together communications into one person.
Yeah. Exactly. And then what they're going to do then with these, apparently, according to this slide, is offensive hacking. They're going to go out and spearfish them. They're going to try to get malware on their computer. We're learning now that the FBI has used malware to investigate crimes. They literally put keyloggers and stuff on your system using spear phishing attacks.
I wonder whether this has anything to do with Google trying to create new advertising targeting mechanisms and giving up cookies.
It's got to kill Google because, of course, this is the fear everybody has about all of this.
Oh, you're tracking us. You're tracking us. No, we're not, says Google, but the government is and using Google. I mean,
using Google cookies. Apparently, the GCHQ in Britain and the NSA have found particular use for a part of a Google-specific tracking mechanism known as the PREF, P-R-E-F cookie. No personal information, but a numeric code that is a unique identifier. So you got the unique identifier. You know this is 123456789. And then you can continue to see that code as the person travels around, knowing where they go. So according to these slides, the cookies are used to, quote, enable remote exploitation. The slides don't say exactly how this is done, but I guess if you know where people are going, you could then hack a site, for instance, that the person frequents, waiting for them. Once it sees the cookie, it can literally just attack them. I mean, it's not too hard to figure out this stuff.
They could, I presume, use anybody's cookie to do this. They just Google's the most ubiquitous.
Anytime a browser makes a connection to any Google property at all, a PREF cookie is created, giving it so that it's a unique identifier. So I have a unique identifier. You have a unique identifier. Maps. Google Search, of course, Google Plus, YouTube, and even if there is a like button. So a lot of sites are not Google sites, but they have a like button or they use Google Connect. If there's a Google Plus widget, and even, you know, think about it, Google Ads, AdSense ads are everywhere.
Right. And also it says that there was a program called Happy Foot, which uses mobile IDs.
I love that the NSA's hackers are so inventive in their naming.
Yeah.
That's how you know they're really hackers. Code name Happy Foot.
True. I'm surprised they didn't name them after Flintstone characters.
So this is even better than Internet geolocation services. Yep. Happy Foot, right. Even when GPS is not enabled, can track you down. What are you going to do?
So what did you think of the Google letter, the Google et al., the eight tech companies letter to the president and Congress on Monday?
Makes for a great full page ad in the New York Times,
mm-hmm.
which it was.
Yes.
And of course, you know, there's two things going on. One is, of course, these companies are pissed off because it hurts their business overseas and it makes their users suspicious of them. Regardless of the fact that some or all of these companies probably have cooperated with the feds for years, I mean, particularly Microsoft. When I see Microsoft going, "Oh no, this is terrible," am I the only one? Maybe it's my bias who feels like, "Come on, Microsoft, you've been helping them out for years, and now, oh no, no, we don't want."
Well, yeah. But on the other hand, I think that there is real economic damage that's being done to the industry and these companies. I mean, I wrote a piece for The Guardian called me. Did this come out Monday?
Yeah. December 9th.
Sunday afternoon, yep. I got Alan Rusbridger came to me and said, you don't want to write a commentary. It was embargoed till midnight. And as I thought this through, my first point is this is in their economic, albeit enlightened, self-interest. Right. What's bad for spying is bad for the internet. What's bad for the internet is bad for Silicon Valley. What's bad for Silicon Valley is bad for America, to rewrite the old GM saw. So there's definitely an economic factor.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
About it.
Yeah.
But I also was delighted to see, you know, I want to see this discussion raised to the level of principles, and the eight companies put forward proposed principles that, for instance, government should not be hoovering everything up. They should be doing what the law had expected before, which is they go after specific targets for specific reasons and have some specificity to what they're seeking, which nobody's going to argue with, that there needs to be some level of transparency, that there needs to be oversight, and also that an oversight clearly has failed. And finally, that we need to avoid the move toward a balkanized web, which is occurring here. Sorry, it wasn't a better picture there, Chad, that I took downstairs here. But the principles also say that this idea, for instance, from Brazil, that Brazilians' data should be stored in Brazil, where, by the way, the Brazilian government could get to it more easily. The data shouldn't have to respect national boundaries. So these principles are at reformgovernmentsurveillance.com. And I'm glad that's where they're trying to push the discussion. I think that part is good. Then I argue that there are things that are missing here. Oh, sorry, my light thinks I'm dead. Now I got to stand up all the way.
It's because you're pink.
Jesus, I got to get all the way
So this is something the university implemented to save power.
Yes.
And I noticed you're also freezing your ass off, so they must have turned off the heat to save
power. Yeah, it's a government employee. It's torture.
Wearing a safety vest.
Yeah. Bulletproof, actually. Yeah. So what's missing from this? Well, what's missing is a letter to David Cameron and the GCHQ. This is an American company's thinking this is an American problem, which to some extent it is, but it's a worldwide problem. What's also missing are various other companies and parts and industries. Where's Amazon? Amazon runs a lot of the cloud. Amazon also has big contracts for the CIA, as Jeff Bezos mentioned on 60 Minutes last week. So where's Amazon? Where are other cloud companies like Salesforce that depend upon the cloud and its health? Where certainly are the telcos? Where is Verizon and where's AT&T and where is Level 3, which allegedly are in a position to hand over our metadata and enable taps straight into the internet? Where is Cisco and other hardware companies whose hardware is used to turn off and also turn off the net? There's a lot that comes next. And then finally, I argued, where are the technologists as a tribe? You know, we have the two Google engineers who, when they found out about the direct taps in lines between Google servers, issued a big FU to the NSA, and that's fine, but anger is not a principle. It's just a reaction after the fact. And I keep on hoping for a larger discussion among technologists, mathematicians, programmers, developers, statisticians, to look at the limits of their power. They have great power. They are the nuclear scientists of our age. They have technology that can be used for good or bad. And they, as individuals, I argue, and as a society, need to get together and need to discuss what their limits are and what's going too far. And so that when a spy or government or an employer asks them to do something, what standards do they call upon? The NSA, once again, is the largest employer of mathematicians in the United States. Yeah. What are the standards? So I finally just argued that it starts with a Hippocratic oath for technologists, which is first harm no user. A little obvious and a little oversimplified, I will grant. But we have to have a discussion of what harms the people who make your tools and your platforms and the internet work. And just because government has done it, even if it's legal, that's no excuse. And so we need a bigger discussion. Nonetheless, with all those caveats, with the economic self-interest, with all that, I was delighted to see the eight companies send the letter to the White House because they do have clout.
They do have a
lot
of clout.
And they are fighting for us. Right. And I think that we now have to have the real debate.
AOL, Apple, Facebook, Google, LinkedIn, Microsoft, Twitter, and Yahoo are the eight companies. And look who's here, Matthew Ingram joining us from GigaHome. Hey, Matthew, thanks for dialing in. We appreciate it.
No problem. I feel a little underdressed.
Well, Jeff's wearing a vest.
I'm wearing a jacket. By the way, do you guys have Uniqlo in San Francisco?
I've heard of it. Yeah, we do, I think.
It is the greatest. It is the IKEA of clothes.
Is it? So it's not a brand, it's a store? Chad's going, yes,
well,
I
both.
Know.
It's both. It's both. Yeah. And they have a very sort. It's very much like the IKEA of clothing. They have a very stylized brand.
Do you have to sew it yourself?
No,
once you get it home.
Close. No, but they have like silly things. Like they have like a wake up app. You know, that's just an alarm clock app that's from Uniqlo, and it's
built
interesting
into
company.
Your clothes. Or?
No, it's just where for they, your Android where, phone.
Are they American company? Who are they?
Japanese company.
Oh.
Well, this is a fake down vest. It's the lightest thing. It weighs nearly nothing. I have a whole coat that is this down that weighs like 2 ounces. It's incredible. And you can roll it up into a little ball, and I can put it in my briefcase, a winter coat. This shirt is Uniqlo.
The first Uniqlo
$29
was opened in 1984 in Hiroshima, Japan. It was a chain of roadside stores to an international leader in style, quality, and fun. They're a leader in fun.
Fun.
Anyway, we were talking before we started talking about clothing about this. The Big Eight asking the president and the government to adhere to these principles. One, limiting government's authority to collect users' information. And they say that it's time for the world's governments. So they did address this to the U.S., but they say it's time for the world's governments to address the practices and laws regulating surveillance of individuals and access to their information. So it isn't just President Obama, it's everybody. Oversight right. and accountability, transparency about government demands. These are the companies, by the way, Facebook, Google, Apple, Twitter, Yahoo, and Microsoft, who have been publishing those transparency reports, taking Google's lead. But they can't say much because the Patriot Act prohibits them from saying anything too specific. Respecting the free flow of information and avoiding conflicts among governments. You know, you got to start with that. If there's no more war, if there's no more conflicts between governments, then who needs all this spying? What we really need is a global world government run by corporations. That's what we need. Larry Page for emperor.
Well, that's how you become, and then you become the president of the internet, Leo, and thus the president of the world.
We need the League of Justice.
That's what we need.
That's
Shield.
Right.
So you can read it all at, as Jeff said, reformgovernmentsurveillance.com.
Anybody mention the term motherhood at all?
No, apple pie or motherhood.
I mean, you know, I'm in favor of all those things too, and
right.
It would be great if we could make them happen. But
how?
Are they going to help that happen, or is it just a statement of, wouldn't it be great if we were all free?
I'm not so cynical about this. I think that you know, there is now a discussion. You know, the discussion had to wait until, I'm disappointed, or remain disappointed, and I've said it on the show, that Google and company, all those eight companies and more who aren't there, didn't do this 6 months ago in this seven-month-long story. They tried to hide. I talked with executives at other companies who said, no, we don't want to get anywhere near this. If we just don't talk about it, it kind of goes away. And I said, BS, it's not going away. And so when it finally affected them so directly with taps in their own lines among their servers, they got mad enough to do something. Same as Dianne Feinstein, your senator, Leo.
I know.
Was the love girl of the NSA until they went after Angela Merkel. Oh, that's one of mine. can't do that. And you know, God helps they're tapping Diane's phone. This took too long, but I still think it's important that it's happening. There is now a discussion. There is going to be a review and reform in this country of some form. So it's time that we start getting the specifics. So I think proposing principles like these is a very constructive act. And the first principle of trying to limit what you do to what's needed to do, to define a need, rather than saying just because we can gather it all, we will gather it all, that is the crux of the argument.
And certainly in the U.S., I doubt the GCHQ cares one whit, but certainly in the U.S., these eight are important for camp. I mean, this is when President Obama was running for president, he came to Silicon Valley and talked to these people. These are these are important thought leaders in the United States. It's a very important part of the U.S. economy. And I guess we could take it, I don't want to say at face value, but I guess we could take them as being sincere and saying they'd like to solve this.
Yeah, with the given of their economic interest. I mean, they do have self-interest at work.
Simply.
Yes,
their
company.
That's all required.
But I'm also happy that we're having this in the U.S. And my putative sometimes boss, Alan Rusbridger, the editor of The Guardian, was called before a parliament select committee a week ago. And it was a shameful, horrid performance from some of the MPs there who questioned his patriotism for revealing government's actions to government citizens. And the attitude in the UK is oddly very different from what it is here.
What is the attitude there?
The attitude there is, it's said that Brits like spies, oversimplification, but there's less hostility to a spy structure, you know, James Bond and all that, John le Carré. More substantively, you also have a war going on among the newspapers. And because The Guardian reported on the bad activities, the spying, the phone hacking of News Corp, that's leading to new talk of regulating all newspapers. And I'm not actually in favor of that, but be that as it may. And so all the newspapers hate The Guardian. And so nobody's standing up with The Guardian, even as this shameful performance occurs in Parliament.
I don't think it's just that, though. I think there's a... and this is just my, based on, you know, no scholarly research whatsoever, but there seems to be an attitude in the UK and in Canada as well, that freedom of information is not a sort of absolute, and that when push comes to shove, those societies are much more likely to say, well, the government wouldn't be doing it if there wasn't something important behind it. Therefore,
right.
We should.
You're right, Matthew. There's a reflex to regulation there, a reflex to trust. When I talked about public parts in Germany at the Republica conference before I wrote it, and I talked about what I call the German paradox about privacy, somebody in the audience said, well, what about the American paradox? And I said, well, what's that? And they said, the American paradox is that you Americans have probably the best government of anyone in the world for the last 200 years, but you have the least, sometimes the least trust in government. You have some of the worst companies, but you trust companies more than we do in Europe. And so in Europe, it's the opposite. There's much less trust of companies, much more trust of government. Mm-hmm. There's a libertarian streak here, even if you're not. So you're right. I think that that's the difference, too. And I think you're absolutely right, Matthew, that Canada is certainly not only because it was part of the empire, but Robertson Davies used to say that Canada is more like Scandinavia than like the U.S.
Well, and the principle is peace, order, and good government, right?
Right.
Not life, liberty, and the pursuit of, you know, a big gulp or whatever. It's peace, order, and good government. Sorry, I changed that.
Hey, I want to take a break because we have to, but I'm really glad Matthew's here. Matthew talked a little bit, wrote about hoaxes on GigaOM. We were talking before you got here about the Google protester hoax and what this means for new media. I want to talk about that. According to the Financial Times, YouTube could be stand to make as much as $5.6 billion this year in advertising. Whoa! And the Upworthy problem. I think you and Matthew and Jeff will know what I mean when I say that. Facebook and Upworthy. We'll talk about lots more. This is a good panel for this kind of thing in just a bit. As I mentioned, Gina is off this month, but contrary to rumors, she is not off the show. She will be back in January. We're doing a special show, actually, for a Christmas Day. We're going to do a best of. Is it too late now to contribute to the best of, Chad? Have you already edited it?
All right.
If there are memories you have of the year 2013 that you think should be in a best of, go to twit.tv/best of. twit.tv/best of. And it says things like, what's the time code? Please don't. What's the frequency, Kenneth? Don't be put off by that. Give us whatever you know. If you happen to know the time code, okay, but I doubt you do. I don't.
We're looking for stuff like conversations and big topics, not like Jeff sneezed a whole bunch in this video.
Well, that's a good – that's filler. conversation, Jeff sneezed.
I want to see a chart of my skin colors through the year. Pinker, pinkest.
Well, twit.tv/best of to contribute. And by the way, don't forget that then 2 weeks, the week after Christmas. So next week we'll be here. Christmas Day, we will be doing the best of. The week after that, New Year's Day, I will have been broadcasting all day before because of New Year's Eve. We're doing the 24 hours of New Year's. So do I have to come in, Chad, and do This Week in Google the next day?
I don't think we've thought about this. I don't think we have a contingency plan for that yet.
I may be in jammies.
Of course you do.
You may
be asleep.
Of course
I do, says Matthew.
Of course you do.
Hey, I noticed that Ohm gets to go to Paris. What about you, Matthew? They leave you the keys to the blog and said, I'll see you later. I'm in the web.
Leo, you'll get to go to sleep at 4 a.m.
I mean, that's true. I'll have plenty of rest by the time we are.
Yeah, you'll
there.
Have at least...
Well, we are doing security now the day before, so maybe I could just come in at noon or 1.
Maybe we should move all your shows on Tuesday to that day because we have 24 hours to fill.
We'll figure it out.
We will.
I'm going to be drinking champagne 27 times in that 24 hours because there are 27 New Year's countdowns, and we're going to do each one. Many of them, we hope, will be Skypes to that region. So we'll welcome 2014 27
So
times.
You're going to be hammered.
You could say that.
You're going to be unintelligible.
I don't know what I'm going to be, but it part of the amusement of all this is watching me dissolve. Bit by bit by bit. You know what? Somebody's got a good idea. I'll Skype in for the shows via my Xbox One. I have a nice recliner. I'll be lying there like this.
In your snuggie.
What do you think?
It's like when Howard Stern has callers who fall asleep while they're on hold, and then he leaves them on snoring. I think he's had one on for an hour, just snoring
really?
The whole time. Oh, yeah. It's a good joke.
It's a great joke. Are you
Leo
kidding?
Can go to sleep.
It's brilliant. Brilliant.
Chad has to go running across town to bang on the door to wake him up. Yeah, I like that. You're right.
I have no idea. I mean, I've done these before. We did a 24 hours of iPhone when the iPhone came out. That was in 2008. We did it on Tech TV. We did the call for help-a-thon. So I've done this before, but I was a lot younger. All I can say, one word, catheter. Our show today brought to you by Hover.com. Hover has simplified domain name management. Get yourself a great domain name for less. Don't have to do all that upselling that the other ones do. Not lots of clicks to get a domain name. And, of course, they know when you want a domain, you're going to want privacy. So that's included in the price. They don't believe in hiding functionality or requiring extra payments for things that should be included, like whois, privacy, subdomains, URL forwarding. Hover.com, they are the best. They only offer services that enhance the domain name experience. They only partner with companies they believe offer customers their best value, just like us. Hover email makes it easy to create a memorable email address and not have to worry about, you know, changing addresses in the future. Hover's honest. Hover is the way to do it. I want you to go to hover.com, hover.com/twig, and take a look at what Hover has to offer, including Google Apps for Business. You don't have to be a big business to do this. A family could do it, a club, a group. You get everything you love about the full suite of Google productivity apps, Gmail, Calendar, Drive, Docs, the whole package, 25 gigs of storage, and support from Hover, which is really nice. I mean, this is a great... If you're not sure if this is right for you, there is a 30-day trial to see what you think. I think this is a great idea, a great way to use Google Apps. Hover offers all the big top-level domains. Of course, .com, a lot of the .coms are gone, but they have a full range of .nets, and I think that is really probably the next best choice. .org, .tv, that's what we use, .pro, .mobi, .biz, and now .io. They also have country designations, .ca, .us, .asia, .uk. I think you're going to like Hover. That's why we've arranged a special deal. Use our offer code TWIG. That new thing, .me, .net. That new thing, .net is available. I'd sign up for it right now. That new thing that you're into, $15 and you're in. But get 10% off. Don't forget to use the offer code TWIG. Save yourself some money. Hover.com/TWIG. We love them. We use them. We encourage you to do the same. Matthew Ingram is here from GigaOM. Jeff Jarvis, City University of New York. Gina has the week off. Nice to have you both. It's the Upworthy problem. All of a sudden, I don't know about you, but all of a sudden I'm seeing all these Upworthy posts in my Facebook feed. And now Upworthy's not new. I thought maybe Upworthy's doing something really good. They do, you know, they have these great headlines that make you feel good about life. And then when you go to watch that silly kitty video at Upworthy, they make sure that you have a big button that says pass it on, and they have a big Facebook button. So, but there is another reason why Upworthy's showing up all the time on your Facebook feed. Matthew, you wrote about this.
Yeah, the biggest reason is Facebook. So.
This
Facebook.
Happened right the same time that Twitter's IPO happened. What did Facebook do?
They are fiddling with the algorithms that run their newsfeed. And so they're, interestingly enough, it sounds to me at least as though they actually want to downplay things like Upworthy and BuzzFeed.
What gets on the top of the feed now? For some reason, Dan Lyons, fake Steve Jobs lives at the top of my newsfeed now.
Yeah, it's funny. I've seen his a bunch too. And I know, I think it was BuzzFeed wrote about some sites are seeing huge increases in the amount of traffic that Facebook is sending them. So they're clearly fiddling with the gears, you know, that determine what gets displayed and what doesn't. And, you know, Upworthy's incredibly viral content. I see it dozens of times in my Twitter stream and my Facebook feed.
I don't want to.
Have you seen the upworthygenerator.com?
Yeah.
You know, it's become a cliche. It's just as BuzzFeed has become its own cliche. Upworthy has become its own cliche. And all it is the old – I mean, I was a tabloid guy. I wrote those headlines. I know what it's like to do that, and it's tabloid. That's all it is.
Upworthy generator. Here's an Upworthy generated headline. Try not to let your jaw hit the floor when you hear these two words. And then a video of a woman crying. And how can you not click on that? Let's create another. This is so awesome. Watch a legendary high schooler become a role model with one question.
Their favorite is, this guy did something and you'll never believe what happened next.
Here's what happens when a director stands up for people who can't. And a teary woman. Here's what happens when an NBA coach gets real about the biggest problem in America.
Those sound like real headlines.
You need to drop everything and hear the tear-jerking two words this trailblazing author found. And then a woman in tears. It's quite good.
You know what, though? People click on them. Like, in a way, it reminds me of spam, the early days of spam. The reason why they did those things was because people clicked on them. And... Upworthy works because people click on them.
Well, you know what? It's interesting. I talked to Tony Hale, the founder and CEO of Chartbeat, a wonderful company that does great analytics on pages. And we need to have Tony on sometime. But he said that what they're finding in part is that a lot of people share things before they read them.
Yeah.
And so the belief that, oh, it's shared, it got read, it really engaged people, not necessarily. You just kind of see that little reflexive moment and you send it off to somebody else and that's how this crap rises.
Well, and people see a headline like, you know, this coach did something amazing to stop racism or something. Well, you want to be seen as someone who doesn't like racism, so you're going to share it. It doesn't matter what it says.
And you don't read it.
No, of course not.
You don't watch the video. Who has time for that? I only have time to share.
And in fact, Twitter, I was just noticing today the mobile version, you know, they've added retweet buttons right below the content. So you don't have to click on the
tweet.
And so you can retweet it literally without even reading it.
It's much more convenient that way.
Yeah. Well, I bet you see this too, Matthew, is all the time I'll put up a post and I'll tweet it. And before anyone could possibly have read the post, I start getting reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And retweets
Why
in particular.
Would you like
and I know some of it is bots. Like some in particular Mashable stuff gets retweeted 500 times. Before even a robot could read the text, because everyone's trying to sort of draft off of their social. The comparison for me to Upworthy is SEO. So SEO headlines, remember when we were all upset about those? This is sort of a similar thing. It's emotional SEO, you know? So these headlines are sort of being sort of calculated to tug at your heartstrings.
It's human heartstring optimization.
Yeah, except it's gonna fail for the same reason SEO did. Yeah. People will get used to it.
Matt Cutts.
So now all the headlines sound the same, right?
They're calling all... Matt Cutts.
So and you know, Google and Facebook are both gonna particularly Facebook is tweaking its algorithm to try and drive that stuff down, I think.
What is Facebook trying to accomplish?
Yeah, Matthew,
they want more news.
What's this bit about Facebook wanting to be a front page? What do you take on that?
So, well, that's what I wrote about today because
that was a cue for you, Matthew. Yes.
Yeah. Mike Isaac talked to some anonymous sources at Facebook about what Chris Cox, the VP of product, thinks about and what Mark Zuckerberg thinks about when they think about what they want the news feed to do. And what they want it to be is like a newspaper, a place where you get all the stuff that's important to you. And so the tension there is, obviously, lots of people just want to share cat gifs and photos of their child or whatever, or stupid things like Upworthy posts. So, but Facebook doesn't want them to do that. Facebook wants it to be high quality and sort of important in a way. That's my sense.
Is their algorithm looking at does their algorithm look at what I consider high quality or what is generally considered high quality?
I think it's looking at what's generally considered high quality.
See, that's where it fails.
There were some other sort of clues. You know, a lot of this is sort of trying to, it's smoke and mirrors in a way. So it's all suggestions. And so Peter Kafka talked to someone about the news feed, and they said, you know, we want fewer internet memes and more kind of thousand word serious analytical pieces. But I'm not clear on whether that's because people seem to like 1,000-word analytical pieces or because Facebook wants them to like long analytical pieces. And
or
you know what?
Whether they I see like internet memes or are getting tired. I don't know.
Well, I think they want the feed, let's put it, to me at least, I think they want the feed to be more serious because they're hoping that it will attract advertisers. That's my own sense.
Newspapers don't attract advertisers.
And you know, my point was newspapers as sort of gatekeepers, the problem comes when editors decide that they know what you should read and you don't. And so, and I think that's part of the tension between newspapers and other ways of consuming information. If Facebook just wants to take over that role and say, we're going to show you a bunch of stuff that you're not actually interested in, but we think...
we got people to do that. We don't need...
Yeah, we already have people doing that.
There's not a lot of future in that, don't we know, Matthew?
Right.
You say in your article on GigaOhm.com that Facebook... Actually, you're quoting McIsaac, but the Facebook is delaying support for animated GIFs for this reason, fearing that the stream will fill with memes.
And they've specifically, like Chris Cox, the VP of product, has apparently specifically mentioned that he doesn't like BuzzFeed. And so, you know, if I was BuzzFeed, that would certainly make me a little nervous because Facebook is a huge platform. And
what
a lot
is the,
of this,
how much of their referrals come from Facebook?
Right. So a lot of that sort of brings up the same issues around building your business based on, you know, sharing through another platform. If Facebook suddenly decides, like they did with social readers, remember when The Guardian and Washington Post had social readers and their content was shared millions and millions of times, and then Facebook made a tiny change in the algorithm. Boom. Dead.
Well, you know what's interesting there, Matthew, too? It goes back to your analogy about SEO. Twitter puts your feed in whatever you asked for. There's no algorithm in the way. Facebook has an algorithm in the way. Google Plus has an algorithm in the way.
Right.
SEO is an algorithm in the way. Those are the new gatekeepers. And so they can adjust for these things. And so, yeah, BuzzFeed figured out how to game Facebook.
Yeah.
And Facebook is evidently going to fight back. Now, whether they have the right formula for what people want, but if they don't, they're going to see the numbers right off the bat. They're going to stop. They care about engagement.
And in a way, it's like, so you figured out a trick, you know, that involves card counting or something. You're at the tables in Vegas. Well, the house always wins, right? Facebook is the house. So...
Well, and you say, you know, your headline kind of says it, Matthew, the new meet the new boss, just like the old boss.
Yeah.
And if you have any question as to what Facebook's motivation is, note that while they haven't turned on animated GIFs or GIFs, they have turned on videos that autoplay in the stream.
Right. Exactly.
Which is extremely annoying, but it's something advertisers would obviously want.
Incredibly annoying. And a big part of this is it's obscure, right? The same way newspapers were obscure. You didn't know why the editors were choosing those stories that were on the front page. You don't know why Facebook is showing you certain things in your stream and not other things. You don't know whether it's because an advertiser paid them to or because their algorithm says certain things about you. You just have no clue.
And I feel like we can see it now. I mean, I noticed this algorithmic because it's weird. And I'm seeing Dan Lyons like every other post. That can't be right. And the same thing with Google Plus. So do you think, Jeff, this means Twitter wins because it is there's no intermediary?
Well, or does it lose because it can be junked up with
a lot of
stuff?
It's memified, yeah.
And even it has started changing. It's no longer just the sort of chronological, for example, conversations. I don't know what you think about that, but where tweets are connected by a blue line, those actually alter the flow of Twitter, so you will old tweets show up. In fact, I see conversations multiple times. Sometimes that's interesting because it might be a conversation I didn't see. Sometimes it's hugely irritating.
By the way, I love you, Dan Lyons. I don't want you to think because I follow him and I think he's great and I think he's hysterical and we're going to have him on our show soon. But it's just an example. But I look through my Facebook feed. Okay, so the number one post from a guy I follow is from ICan'tBelieveIt.org, Strange and Improbable Animal Friendships, 30 Pictures. I'm going to click on all of these. Then there's an ad for free meals from Plated. I don't know what that is. I don't care.
Boy, I got that ad too. And by the way, go do me a favor. Go back up and look at the label on that. The label on top of that ad says, I think it's something like recommended post or something.
Oh, it doesn't. Yes, yeah, suggested post. It doesn't suggested say ad. Post.
It doesn't say ad.
It does down below say sponsored.
It is,
but above, suggested by whom?
Suggested by the advertiser who paid good money to suggest it. This is very annoying. And I think maybe it also has to do with the new call out, the way these articles are called out. They really feel like, you know, here's College Humor. Here's HubSpot, which is Dan's company. Here's your chance to write a happy ending for the most heartwarming Christmas story ever. Obviously, HubSpot has figured this out.
That's an upworthy headline right
That's
there.
Very upworthy, and it's got a picture of a guy, and you want to know more, and what is the most heartwarming Christmas story ever? I've got to find out. You know, I mean, my feed is full of this crap, and it doesn't really endear me to it. It's become very obvious that it's algorithmic, right?
And you have no control over it, right?
And you don't know what's happening or why.
You can use the pull down and say, hide this post, and then maybe it will or maybe it won't. You can use the pull down to say, you know, block this user. But you don't have a lot of fine-grained control over what you see and what you don't see.
And then there's this, poor Trey Ratcliffe, great photographer, love him. Got a Capital One ad because Trey Ratcliffe likes Capital One. And I bet you anything, Trey Ratcliffe couldn't care less about Capital One.
You know what? I've been seeing those a lot, too, and I've been making a point of asking the people who supposedly liked that thing, whether they liked it, and over 50% of them said no, they never did.
Well, that's so really bad.
Sport. Yeah, I don't know how that even happened.
Trey lives in New Zealand. I doubt very much he has a Capital One credit card. I'd be shocked if he does.
So how did that get in there?
So like, how did that get
the
in
algorithm
there?
Algorithm liking things on their behalf? Because
well,
that's disturbing.
I could tell you the upshot. I visit Facebook much less than I used to, a lot less. I hardly ever go there now.
And I think they're actually shooting themselves in the foot if what they want to become is a newspaper that chooses things for you to see based on what they think is quote-unquote high quality or serious or whatever they want to call it.
Yeah, it's not about the content. It's about your friends. Facebook is a connection.
I want to see my friends and family and what they're up to.
Yeah. And if they're sharing some stupid Upworthy or BuzzFeed thing,
that's fine.
Well, then,
that's what they're up to.
It's what they're doing.
And I'm getting a lot of people who I follow. I mean, obviously, these are all people you have to be people you follow, right, in your newsfeed, except for the advertisers.
But I remember, I mentioned in the post, I remember in 2011, Larry Page was talking to, I'm trying to remember who it was now, at an event about Google News. And this person was complaining that Google News was just full of, you know, frivolous stories and there wasn't enough important kind of journalism surfaced in Google News. And Larry Page said, yeah, you know what? You're right. We should fix that. We should we should make more important stories show up. And my alarm bells went off. And I started thinking, well, I don't want Larry Page to decide what the important stories are in my Google News.
Well, but they do already. Matthew, they do already. There's already an algorithm that chooses placement on various things. And some odd things get up. So they're already in control of that.
But that was what appealed to me about Google News. I love the idea of a machine doing it, unbiased machine doing it. And they pick authoritative sources and then let a machine, but it's not that, obviously. It's tweaked, highly tweaked.
And it's obviously based on what the accumulation of media are doing. So right now the top story is House to Vote Thursday on budget deal.
Right.
The signal that the algorithm gets is, my God, everybody's writing about a budget deal. Must be important. So it's already the agglomeration of the media.
Facebook's playing a dangerous game here, I think.
A lot of the problem is the black box issue, right? You don't know what Google's algorithm is doing. You don't know what Facebook's algorithm is doing. There's no option to say, I want to see more of these things, less of those things, or there's no obvious way to do that.
And well, so I think that's important too, Matthew, is that the I think, and I guess there's some new editing possible on the Google News Android app, which I haven't gotten yet and played with, but I've always been surprised that Google News, which is moving toward relevance and personalization elsewhere, away from the one-size-fits-all search result, for example, that Google News being one-size-fits-all is rather absurd to me.
Me too.
And I can pick certain categories, but that's not learning enough.
I know, and I keep saying it over and over and over for the last probably 3-4 years. I don't understand why Google, they've got to have reams of information that would allow them to help you customize Google News, and yet they seem to have no interest in doing that whatsoever. I just don't understand it.
Um Let's take a break and come back. I want to get our timing right on this one. We've got Matthew Ingram, Giga Ohm here. It's great to have him. Jeff Jarvis, City University of New York, Public Parts, BuzzMachine.com. It's such a rare opportunity to get you two guys together. I mean, this is really a good time to talk a little bit about media and stuff like that. But there's some other stuff to talk about, too. We'll get to all of it. Well, not all of it. Much of it. Just a little bit. Holy cow, there's a lot to talk about. But first, a word from Atlassian, the creators of Jira. Atlassian Jira. Now, Atlassian.com/twig is the place to go to find out about Jira, the project management solution. Completely customizable, completely powerful, that will capture and organize your workflow so you can prioritize it and take action on what's important without giving up the tools you love. It keeps you up to date on the activity going on around you. You can easily capture your team's issues, tasks, features, bugs, prioritize them as you go. Easy-to-use interface. It integrates all your documents, including your Google Apps, your backlog, your issues, your code repository. Works with all the big code repositories, of course. That's why Jira is used now by 20,000 companies, 70% of the Fortune 100. NASA uses it. That's a project management, right? You're going to Mars, you use Jira. You can even build onto Jira yourself with the REST APIs that Atlassian offers. Flexible and simple, enough for a 5-person startup, powerful and reliable enough for a 100,000-person enterprise. And you can go infinitely, really, in any direction with hundreds of Jira add-ons, test management, time tracking, project management. So if you've got code, you can do it from the initial planning doc right through the files and changes in your code repository all the way to deployment. Plan, track, work smarter and faster, very affordable, and I think you're going to see why so many big companies like Twitter and NASA and eBay and Cisco and Adobe and Hulu and everybody else uses it. J-I-R-A, that's from Gojira, and it is an Atlassian product. You can find out more at Atlassian.com/twig. By the way, monthly plans start at $10 a month for up to 10 users, and it's free for 30 days when you go to Atlassian.com/twig. We thank them so much for their support. Apple TV's getting live news from Bloomberg TV today. I keep wishing we could get our live stuff on Apple TV, but Apple is really the ultimate gatekeeper, right?
How big is Apple TV? Do we have any sense of the metrics for that?
Yeah, 31 million units. It's not huge.
Wow. Well,
it's the biggest. It's the biggest set-top box. Roku, last time I checked, this is a few months ago, Roku, I think, was at 13 million. Mm. And then it trails off rapidly after that. But, you know, Time Magazine said the Chromecast is the gadget of the year 2013, and Google's Chromecast added, I think, 10 new channels. I guess what it seems to be now is that Google is the gatekeeper, and what they want to do is do kind of big rollouts. So they want to do it in clumps. So HBO Go, which I was watching the other day on my Chromecast, that's awesome. Vivo, the music service, Beyond Pod, which is a podcasting client. Unfortunately, paid a podcasting client. You have to have the paid version to get the Chromecast working. Some oddball stuff. Viki, which is, I don't know what it is, Korean and anime and...
Yeah, it's an odd list. It's not a very exciting list.
Hulu Plus, though, that's exciting. Pandora's been out for a while. So, you know, I don't know how well these are selling, but I think Chromecast is getting more and more interesting, isn't it? And that was the idea. And it's so easy to use and it's so cheap. So then the new stuff includes Red Bull TV, inspirational programming from Red Bull. Songs is great. It's a music service. I love that. Plex is great because it means you can, and this is important, play local content.
Yeah, Plex is great.
Through your Chromecast. So if you've got a Plex server, and you have to pay for the paid version of it for this right now, although I bet it'll go free. Post from the Washington Post, Post TV, Viki, and the Real Player Cloud. I didn't even know Real Player was still in business. But
yeah, I was going to say, oh, Real Player. Oh, no, stay away.
But it's not that. It's not like that anymore.
I know, but it was the most hated service.
Oh, yeah.
For a while there.
They announced this Real Player Cloud a few months ago, and I'm not sure exactly what it does, but
can you get Friendster on there? Or?
MySpace.
Ah, those were such good times. Real Player Cloud enables you to move, watch, and share your videos. So the idea is that you can watch your own content, and including some, you know, DivX and MKV and XVID and some of the oddball formats. So I don't think you have to install a Real Player on your Chromecast. I think it just you install it on your iPhone, your Android phone, and the Real Player Cloud is what you need to install. I like the idea that you can play your own local videos finally without the Tabcast that was kind of always a little funky. So now you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 services. And now we are not, Revision 3 is in there. We are not. I think that's because Revision 3, first of all, is a Discovery Channel company, and that helps. But I think they also have their own app. I know Houdini 7. We have our apps are not done in-house. They're done by third parties who decide to. They're volunteers. And I know Houdini 7 said he was going to add Chromecast capability to his Twit app for iOS and Android. The problem is I think that Google has to approve you. And so you have to be in some sort of – and I presume that this is what we're going to start seeing is every week or so leading up to the holiday. I guess you get 2 more weeks before Christmas. They'll announce another chunk of stuff. You can stream us from a Chrome tab. That does work. Houdini 7 says, yeah, I'm just waiting on Google. Houdini is Craig Mullaney of ShiftKey Software. He says he's waiting on Google approval. So, Craig, we're gonna be in touch because I think what we want to do is see if we could, hello, Google, pull any strings. Hello, Google. Are you there?
Is anyone there from Google?
Anybody
Google?
At Google?
Are you
there?
Out there?
Please, Google. Please let us do our Chromecast, please. It's all we ask. Please let us Chromecast.
I would like that.
I would too. But right now I was watching HBO Go, watching Deadwood on Chromecast this morning, and it was great. Looks good, works well. They have the new interface, you know. It's nice. It's a slideshow. Every 10 seconds, beautiful pictures. I noticed one of them was by Peter Norvig.
Huh.
So I wonder if the pictures on the backgrounds of the Chromecast now are all Google employees or where they're getting them. They give credit to everybody, and they rotate through them, which is neat. So, yeah, good way to start the morning. Deadwood. I like to start the morning with prostitutes.
I'm almost caught up with Walking Dead. I've been catching up with the entirety of
it. See, I can't watch that in the morning.
It'll get you down.
Yeah, me neither, actually. Too squeamish.
But I do watch True Blood sometimes in the morning, so who knows? Yeah.
I'm sorry we're going to go off topic here badly, but I started watching the tape of The Sound of Music with...
That was the worst thing I ever saw.
Oh, it was terrible.
Cow.
And the guy from True Blood, who had this great reputation as a, you know, sexy, smart star.
Vampire Bill.
Oh.
He was
and
terrible.
His whistle.
He was terrible. Yeah. It was mind-boggling.
It wasn't bad enough to be entertaining. That was the only thing that disappointed me. I was so hoping it would be like so bad that I would laugh my way through it. Instead, it was just
right in that valley where it's just bad, but not so bad that it's enjoyable.
Now, if I had at the time been playing the Sound of Music drinking game,
what was that one?
Oh my God! You know how these work. You watch a show and then you take a sip. If, for instance, every time somebody yodels, every time the captain blows his whistle, every time you see a Nazi, or every time something unintentionally funny happens. Now, you take 2 sips every time someone's accent falters in the first 10 minutes, like 18 sips.
You'd be hammered.
Yeah.
Carrie Underwood kept slipping into country twang.
Yeah.
How do you solve a problem like Maria? Every time a song sounds twangier than you remember, every time a kid messes up. The kids were good.
They were, actually.
Those were good kids. It was the grown-ups who sucked. Take 3 sips every time an adult messes up. Every time Carrie Underwood is a little too sexy to be a nun. Didn't have any of those. And every time Vampire Bill looks like he might eat one of the Von Trapp kids. it was pretty funny. I don't know. What was you, TV critic Jeff Jarvis?
Well, they're going to do more.
It got huge ratings, Schmaltz. Did it not?
Did it?
Yeah, 18 million audience. Oh, yeah. No, they said they're going to do another musical live event.
I love Live. I think it's great. I think the only mistake they made was casting.
Yeah.
You know what was great? Audra. Say again?
Direction.
Yeah. Well, I know what the real mistake they made, and I hope they don't do this again. They had no live audience. It was just a bunch of people on a soundstage. And I'm telling you, the whole point of something like this is the feedback loop between the audience and the cast members.
Let them play through some odd staging where they can go back, you know, they can open up and they're back in the Abbey immediately and that kind of stuff. But, ugh.
Audra McDonald was amazing in it, though. She can sing. She was the...
she can actually sing.
The head sister, whatever they call that.
She really can.
Boy, was she good. And it was so interesting to see somebody who can actually act and sing. Carrie's got a great voice. She's wonderful, you know, but she can't act. And so it was really interesting to see the two of them paired off.
Carrie said it all.
You know what was also interesting? Jesus. I noticed that Twitter in particular, you know, one of their big sort of selling points is that it makes live events like that more enjoyable. And since I was watching it anyway, because my daughters and wife were watching it,
Sure, we know you wanted to watch it.
Yeah,
you know, just fess up, fella. You're Canadian.
Twitter made it more enjoyable because it, you know, there was live snark sort of while it was going on, and basically live reviews of the show as it was going on.
I'm so mad that I didn't launch Twitter. But see, we're in the Western time zone, so it's kind of screwed up because Twitter people, I see the first 3 hours earlier, all of the tweets. A lot of them going, Nazis, Nazis. That seemed to be a big one.
Someone should offer a feature where you can watch something you recorded or you're in the wrong time zone and you can time code the tweets so that you can see the stream.
Son Jake was gonna build that app years ago. Didn't, but yeah.
What a great idea.
You should be able to watch something socially whenever you want to watch it.
Yeah, yeah, and just pull all
the irony of Twitter is it adds the necessity of live. We got away from live and everything except sports.
Yeah.
And now an event like that, you're right. It's so much worse if you don't have Twitter.
So I paused like a commercial or something, or I paused. Someone came to the door. I think it wasn't Sound of Music, but it was the Oscars or something. And I was all out of sync with people talking on Twitter. And
I know, right.
So according to the Times, a network is buoyed by the Sound of Music ratings. NBC says, we're going to do it all again. 18.6 million viewers, which isn't a huge number. Is it?
These days, though.
Nowadays,
these
days? That's pretty big.
Yeah.
And is that watched? That's anybody who watched 5 seconds of it counts in that number, of course. And that's the question, is how many of those 18.6 million were still watching in the second hour? And the third? And the fourth? And the fifth? So they're going to do what are they going to do next? It doesn't say here. They said they're going to do another one, though.
I was surprised there wasn't a hashtag popping up with suggestions.
Yeah. What would be a crowd pleaser?
You mean a musical or?
Yeah. Live
West
musical.
Side Story.
Oh, West Side Story.
Show, of course.
Stick with the That's stay with her. Yeah.
And who would they cast?
I don't know the young people today.
Miley as Maria.
Miley. Kim Kardashian could be in there.
Yeah.
I want Russell to be in America. I like to stay in America.
Russell Crowe for sure.
Russell Crowe? He's in everything. He should be in everything.
Even though he can't sing.
He sang in Les Miserables, didn't he?
The Miserables. Yes, he did.
It was more of a shout than a sing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was.
Gruff kind of.
My daughter wanted me to yell out at her hockey game, that's the worst call since they cast Russell Crowe in Les Miserables.
Google says 91.4%, to be precise, of non-spam emails sent to Gmail users are now authenticated using anti-phishing standards.
Can you explain that to me?
You know what's so funny? I was going to ask you. There's two systems that are used, and it's up to your ISP or your email provider to do this. The domain key identified email or sender policy framework. The reason there's two is because Microsoft wanted one. Everybody else wanted another.
How does that guarantee you're not a phisher?
it authenticates you that this is coming from your domain, that this is you sending it.
Right.
So it's, in effect, it's like a, it's like without your knowledge, it's in the background, it's signing it.
It stops spoofing.
Yeah. And if you're going to fish or spam, you don't want to, you're going to spoof. You don't want your real email on there.
Right. Okay. Now I understand. Thank you.
Interestingly, a lot of ISPs hedged their bet and did both. 74%, almost 75, are both DKIM and SPF. Over 500,000 domains are using DKIM. SPF, which I think is the Microsoft standard, is only 3.5 million domains. Anyway, that's good. It is the way to end spam, and certainly is effective in phishing, too, is to have authenticated email. Problem is, users don't want to do anything, so this is all done kind of behind their backs.
SPF is also the sunscreen stamps.
It has an SPF of 30 for no spam passing through. My memory on this is pretty. This is old stuff, but yeah, it was Microsoft's sender ID framework, SPF. Sender policy framework. So that's good news anyway. So the time has come for us to go to the store to buy presents we can't afford for people who won't like them. We call it Christmas.
I haven't bought something for my wife that she likes in I don't know how many years. I try. The kids laugh.
Now, does she? Okay, this is good because I have the same problem. Does she covertly bring it back?
No. Oh, God, no. Not my family.
Does
no.
her face fall when she opens
the
box? You get
a snarl immediately.
A snarl?
Oh, yeah. No, it's her family and my family, kind of in trouble, but her family and my family were raised differently, right? In her family, they would just say straight out, why did you get this?
Is she Italian?
No, German.
German.
My family, we would always, and it's a reflex I can't stop to this day. Before somebody opens the present, you say, we can return it.
Yeah.
That's me.
I get the sort of false. Yeah, I get the too. Oh, that's great.
Oh, don't worry, you can return. Oh, that's even worse. The passive aggressive.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, that's so nice.
But you know it's not. You instantly know that it's not.
So all the women in my life always resort to the same thing. They tell me what to get them.
Yeah, which is good. I am totally in favor of that.
I would love that.
Your wife won't do that?
No, because
she wants to be surprised by something she doesn't want.
No, it's just that we kind of don't need anything.
Well, no, nobody needs anything.
So
that is the problem.
That is the problem. Yeah.
By the time, if you're over 15, you don't need anything.
I don't need it.
It's only, plus, it's only kids that say, really I have to have a Sun Spider 2434.
Right, that stuff. The things that I really want, you know, I want my Nexus 5. I'm not waiting for somebody to buy it for me. I'm going to buy myself the Nexus 5. Right. I'm a grown up. I get it.
Well, right? Geeks shouldn't, nobody geeks ever should buy a gadget for a geek.
No.
That's a doomed.
Yes.
But that's, okay, so this is like buying jewelry or clothes. I see this is going to sound sexist for our spouses.
We're going down a rabbit hole here. You sure we want to
I know as little about jewelry and clothes.
Yes. As we might imagine.
You're right. There's no winning this. I can't finish this sentence without sounding like a dick.
I have daughters, and so now my oldest is old enough. I just get her to buy everything. Because A, she knows what's good and what's not. And B, she knows what her mother wants and what she doesn't want. And so like I just outsource all my shopping to her.
That's smart. See, when kids buy you something you hate, that's cute.
Yeah.
Like my son last year, he's 18. Last year, and I hope he's not listening right now, he bought me a novel. He buys me books, which is great, by Michael Savage. And he said, it looked really good. And I just, that's great. Thank you so much. I didn't tell him. Yeah, I used to work with him at KSFO in San Francisco. The man is a nutcase.
What did you do with it?
What can you do? It's on my bookshelf.
Yeah. Okay.
The other great thing is let's just put it this way. Grandparents can also buy magnificently ridiculous gifts.
Oh, yeah.
And there's that moment when you sit around and say, oh, let's open those now so we can have a good laugh.
Right. Frankly. We open those on Christmas Eve. The aunt gift. The grandparent gift.
My mother bought, I think it was last Christmas or the Christmas before, I'm not kidding, a pound of coffee. And pound of coffee and a hat, like a baseball cap with the earmuff things. So that was very
fun. Baseball cap with earmuffs.
That's very Canadian. That's very Canadian. Yeah. I bought one of those in Canada.
It's very Canadian.
In fact, I think it was with you, Matthew, in Brian Cooper, when I bought it.
It's a brisk commerce in earmuff baseball
caps.
In
Victoria, I mean.
They're very comfortable. Anyway, yeah. It was a lovely thought.
The reason I bring it up, of course, is because this year, more than ever, and it always is true every year now, people are going to be doing this stuff online. You know, somebody suggested an Amazon wish list. That would be one way to let people know what you wanted. According to Danny Sullivan, writing in Search Engine Land, two recent surveys suggest Google's paid shopping site isn't leading searchers to the best prices on products.
And that's no surprise because it is a paid
advertising.
Yeah. Advertising, which Danny's always been very mad at Google for switching this. And I don't blame him, actually. But he's been outraged. This to him, I think, is the lowest thing Google's done, is get rid of its legitimate shopping engine and put it in an advertising mechanism. Well, I'm not disagreeing with him necessarily.
Microsoft actually, that's a big part of their Scroogled. Is, you think Shopper is an independent search engine. It's not. It's ads.
And I think part of what Danny's problem is that they said they wouldn't do that.
Right.
So they're specifically doing things that they used to say they would never do.
When you do a Google search and he shows, and by the way, according to some surveys, Consumer Watchdog said there was a $20 price gap between what was listed on Google Shopper and what was listed as the lowest price for the same item on Price Grabber or ShopZilla or Nextag, which are actually shopping comparison engines.
I think Google should not have gotten out of the. I think they should have.
It was an opportunity.
It's a more friendly thing for consumers to give real prices. I don't think the revenue was that much on that shopping stuff. I think it was wrong to drop it.
So he does a search here for Hamilton Beach two-slice metal toaster, the kind of search somebody who knows what they're going to get but wants to find the best price would do. He gets, of course, the yellow box with ads in it, and everybody knows to ignore that, although it does go quite a way down the page. Then he gets this sponsored box from Google Shopper, and these are all paid ads. Only people who pay, Sears, Kmart, JCPenney, Walmart, only the people who pay are going to get on there. And these prices, you might, because you're seeing the dollar amount, you might reasonably say, we've seen boxes like this on Amazon and elsewhere, that these are the best prices. Google does not show the prices in the regular search. So I think it's not unreasonable to think that these are the best prices.
It is what you would expect.
Yeah. So I think there is an opportunity, right? And, of course, if you click it, you get pulled to the Google Shopper site, which, again, is just advertising. Yeah, maybe go to Amazon or Price, Nextag or one of these other Price Grabber, one of these other sites.
I saw a story today, I think in the Times, or where did I see it? Keith Kelly has come out with his new tools piece. It's basically a print blog.
Kevin Kelly.
Cool Tools.
Kevin Kelly. Yeah.
Sorry, Kevin Kelly.
Cool Tools is so good.
Yeah, Nick Bilton
Cool Tools. So now he has a print product. He's a print product based on this.
I have it. It's awesome.
And the QR code takes you straight to Amazon. And I presume he's getting a spiff on every sale made that way.
I would hope.
I don't know. I hope he does.
Oh, it's so good, that book. We're going to have Kevin on to talk about it. Mark Fraunfelder, I think, helped him on it. It is the Whole Earth catalog.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly the point. Yeah, it was the.
I got a whirly pop from it.
Really?
Yeah, but they have QR codes in there, but, I did probably what most normal people are going to do, which is I made a note, whirly pop, went to Amazon, got the price, and bought it. Although, I have to say, I do not do price comparison. I just figure Amazon's going to be the best price. Hmm. And it does have free shipping. So.
And free shipping.
Mm.
And soon it'll be a drone coming to your door, and how can you resist that?
Yeah, wouldn't that be cool? So the chat room is telling me that, according to TechCrunch, confirming it from multiple sources, Instagram, which is having a bit of a show tomorrow, we thought it was going to be all about printing, will be surprising people. It isn't just about printing. Instagram is launching a messaging service this year.
Yeah.
Actually, Ohm wrote about that, had a bit of a scoop saying that that was coming.
He knew. Yep.
A couple days ago, yep. Right?
Yeah.
Messaging is huge. You look at what was the amount of traffic WhatsApp handles. And this is in a very competitive field, too. I mean, there's dozens of these guys. So it's a very powerful stuff. And, of course, Google Hangouts and Apple's messages are doing this using SMS on your phone in addition to the internet one.
In fact, I just got prompted by Google to swap out my messaging app for Hangouts.
I've done that on my phones, and I don't know if
I hate it.
I don't like it.
Why?
It's a heavyweight, and SMS was lightweight.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
There's just too much.
The UI is hard to get back to the messages. Yeah. It's cramming too much in together. Listen, yeah. I like Hangouts. I use Hangouts. To Leo's consternation, I use Hangouts. But they're trying to throw in too many kitchen sinks into it.
Yeah, I agree. There's too much in one. SMS was so simple.
Yep. I'm really, I have the in the dock on my Android phone, I have phone and then used to have messages, SMS, and now I have Hangouts. But I think I'm going to go back to messages.
They actually kind of screwed up the phone thing, too. I don't know about you, but on my Nexus, the whole display of the phone.
I know. It's the same thing.
When you pull it up, it's now so confusing. I can't tell. So I tap on people and accidentally call them, but I really just wanted to look at their information.
Yes!
Yeah, so they need to do some work there, I think.
They made a big deal about, the new phone UI and KitKat. It's so
worse.
Great. They're putting too much stuff in there. We want to...
Simplicity.
Simplicity.
Well, and of course, that used to be Google's big thing, right? We just have a bar, a box, right? Simplicity was the whole deal. And now I wish they could get a little bit of that back.
This is the entropy of technology. The entropy of technology is feature complexity. Creep. It's feature creep.
Yeah.
And there's nothing anybody could do about it. It's a law of nature.
Well, and the only people who can prevent that are guys like Steve Jobs, who basically has people killed.
No. Right.
When they add new features. Because designers and developers, we'll just add this little thing because five people might think it's cool or because we think it's cool.
But it's not just technology. When I started Entertainment Weekly, they were basically done with the design 6 weeks beforehand. And then the designers kept futzing, and I didn't know enough to stop them. And they futzed and made it awful. Look at car designs. They get over futzed. Yep. Futzing's a real danger in design anyway.
Yeah, futzed. No more futzing. Stop futzing. That's why you need a Steve Jobs, who really wasn't a designer. He was
he knew the most important principle, which is it's what you take out
right.
or what you don't include that has a huge impact on the usability.
Yes. Yes, we need another Steve. So Om Malik scooped him November 22nd on Giga Om. He said, what's Instagram's next big thing? Messaging, perhaps. TechCrunch is saying now more sources confirming that. That's an example of feature creep. Instagram did the same damn thing. They started with a very simple, clean, you post pictures, and then it became videos. Now it's going to be messaging. This is not good.
Well, and that's, it's Facebook, right?
I think
the Facebook.
The king of futzing.
Yeah, the whole reason they bought it was because it was part of this huge wave.
Right.
That they want to be part of, and so they're trying to ride it. They've tried their own messaging. How many times now they've tried to do that kind of WhatsApp or to get their Messenger app to be used by more people, and people just won't do it. So,
Gene Munster, who depending on who
was he on that show?
Yeah, Ed Munster, Herman Munster, Gene Munster of Piper Jaffray is an analyst and Apple guys. He does a lot of Apple stuff and Apple guys just, mock him, frankly. But he does do something which I think is quite good. And I think he's attempting to be very objective and serious. He does a annual comparison of Google Now versus Siri, Google Voice Search versus Siri. And they do this pretty rigorously, 800 queries under a variety of controlled and uncontrolled conditions. He gave Google a C+, which is better than the D- it got a year ago, and Siri a C+, up slightly from the C last year. And it's based on, ability to answer questions, to correct when correctly heard, whether it was correct or incorrect when correctly heard, heard correctly, heard incorrectly, in a variety of environments. And, really, if you look at the numbers, they are very similar.
I get so frustrated. I mean, you know, this is. I should complain. You can talk to your phone and it does things for you. If it's right half the time, that's pretty amazing. But when it's wrong, there's no way for me to correct it. No way for me to learn.
Yeah,
that's what's. You know, can I just spell the word for you, you idiot?
Yeah.
Well, and in normal a speech to text like drag and dictate, you do have that capability. Yeah.
You can spell
so
it.
So I don't know why they didn't put it here, because it's you know, I have a restaurant I go to often called Urban Table, and it'll get, you know, 25 variations on it. And I you know, shout it. It's in my phone book. The words are there.
There are just certain things that you know you can't dictate.
That's one of my sort of theories about speech recognition and actually other things that are computer aided, even if they're 98% accurate, that 2% is so irritating.
Exactly.
That's all you think about is the irritating part, not the 98% where it
No, you're exactly right. That's exactly how I measure the quality of those old style speech to text systems like Drag and Dictate, is what percentage is correct. And it usually is, you know, 95-98%. And more importantly, how easy it is to fix it if it's wrong. Because you're going to spend, if you spend 2% of the time fixing it, it's got to be easy so it doesn't get in your way. But what was that? Freakishly realistic telemarketing robots.
So this is related. This is crazy. Let me just play it. There's two, and you almost have to listen to both of these.
These are from telemarketing. So this is over the phone.
Hello, how are you today?
Okay, how are you?
Good. Well, I'm calling about an online request.
She's the robot.
Made about health insurance.
I wasn't sure.
We work with all major companies and compare all the rates for you. I can get you a quote in about 5 minutes, okay?
Are you a robot?
I am a real person. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine, but you sound like a robot.
I understand.
So that one's interesting.
The long pause is kind of a giveaway.
Hi, good. How are you?
Here's the second one.
Well, I'm calling about an online request you once made about health insurance coverage.
Okay.
We work with all major companies and compare...
Hey, are you a robot?
What? No, I am a real person.
I am a real person.
A bad connection. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, that's crazy. So you just sound so much like a robot.
I am a real person. Maybe we have a bad connection.
He's slurring.
I'm sorry about that.
Will you tell me you're not a robot? Just say I'm not a robot, please.
I am a real person.
I mean, I believe you, but will you just say, I'm not a robot? It'll make me feel better to hear you say it.
There is a live person here.
But I know there is. It would just make me feel so much better to hear you say, I am not a robot.
So great.
What?
If you could say the words, I'm not a robot, it would really mean a lot to me.
I am a real person. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
So that we've heard now all the canned responses.
I am not a robot.
They're repeating it.
Yes, I'm a real person.
Right, but when you say I'm not a robot?
Why do I feel like this is in our future? Like, this is going to be in 10 years my life?
That's pretty
convincing,
though.
This is like the great Howard Stern shtick where Richard and Sal will take ridiculous pieces of audio and call somebody with them. Like, they'll just have a name. Yep. Yeah. Is Leo
I remember
there?
Those. Yeah.
And they're doing it still on it.
They use a soundboard, yeah.
Yeah,
and
the soundboard,
they can keep them going. They can keep them going for 5 minutes.
They used to do it with a clip from True Lies of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The scene with him.
I'm not a machine. Speaker. Yeah. Yeah.
Who is your daddy?
Who's your daddy?
Yes, exactly.
Now, I am not a robot.
I wonder what that I'm platform is, because now I can imagine Sal and Richard there just typing away things and calling 100 numbers.
Well, I think that's a human voice recorded, but there's a significant amount of recognition going on, because obviously it recognized the word robot.
How they also got her to do the laugh. Charming laugh.
Yeah, well, they have a script. She comes in. She's a real person. She reads the script.
Laugh and say no.
It says laugh and say no. No.
It was good, though.
I'm not a real person. I'm a robot.
Not like most of the robot voices where the pitch, you know, changes from word to word.
One, two, three, four, five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have not.
That's because we've gotten better at this. It's not that hard.
Well, and it's getting, I mean, that's pretty close.
Like, who's your daddy? What does he do?
Exactly.
Now, wouldn't it be interesting if we learned that the Amazon Mayday gal is a robot?
I was
robot?
Just thinking of that.
No wonder she didn't mind when the guy hit on her.
What was her little aw?
Aw.
Aw.
Aw. Aw. Nexus TV. This comes from the information. Jessica Lessons do paywalled blog, which I paid for. Although, now that I think about it, isn't such a deal. It costs about the same as a Wall Street Journal and gives you maybe an article or two a day. Nevertheless, they've got really good people. She brought Amir Afradi, who has excellent contacts at Google, over from the Journal. Of course, Jessica Lessons has been a really good, astute reporter on the Apple folks. To me, it's worth it. But because I bought it, I can now show you the whole article, which I probably shouldn't do. Actually, I asked Jessica. She was on Twitter. She said, no, that's fine. We expect people to do that. Didn't somebody, Business Insider, somebody say, we're going to publish every single article?
Yeah, Business Insider said if they get anything good. It was fascinating. Nick Carlson said, I think Jessica and the information are going to work out pretty well. And he said if she gets this many subscribers,
right,
she can turn it into a pretty good business. But if she gets anything good, we're going to tell you all about it.
Right. So don't bother subscribing.
She, I actually interviewed her and wrote a post about it, and she said the same thing.
It was a good post, Matthew.
She actually expects, and she's hoping that sites will do that because that's going to help market the site.
Yeah. And presumably, if you're a subscriber, you'll get it quicker and sooner. And she's smart enough to say, I'm going to target people, just as the Wall Street Journal does, who's for whom this information is money.
Right.
That's the only person who's going to pay $400 for it. And so for those people, having it right away instead of waiting for Nick Carlson to synopsize it or determine what's important will make a difference. And she does have very good people. It's an interesting, you know, I'm not a fan of the paywall, but I do think that the Journal has succeeded and she may very well succeed because of the audience.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a high-end possibility, but it puts the requirement on her to work really hard because in the tech blog world, so much of the junk is just repeated over and over and over again and weakened along the way, it's overcovered.
Mm-hmm. But isn't that, I mean, wouldn't she say that's the opportunity for her?
Yep.
She's going to have unique stuff. Yep. She'll be the first. Yes, that'll be repeated again and again in, you know, telephone fashion.
Let's be honest. At some point, it's about leaks, right? Michael Larry.
It's about sources. It's about sources.
Yeah, it's sources and leaks.
Yep.
And what's the interest of the leaker, which is often an official company person putting a trial balloon up, what's their interest in putting it on the information versus putting it on GigaHome?
That's interesting.
That's a good point. If they want specific readers, then the information might be worthwhile. But if they want broad sort of readership, that might not be.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm sure Amir and Jessica have the contacts because they were at the Journal. Question is whether those people will continue to feed them information at the information. We want to do that. I'm really tired of this network being just an echo chamber for I don't want to read what The Verge said. I want The Verge to read what we said. And that requires spending some money hiring people with connections. It's challenging.
Is that some of your plan for the news operation?
It is. I think that's what we need to do. We need to be we need to have people working for us who have contacts who can get the story.
Yeah.
And it's I don't know if we're going to be able to do it, but I think that's what we need to do. We've got the analysis side down great. I mean, I think we have really smart people, Matthew and Jeff and Steve and Paul and Mary Jo and all. We got great people, authoritative voices, John C. Dvorak, who analyze great. We need some reporters.
They need to be quoted. How does that work out in the timing of video? So if something breaks,
live.
If you get a scoop at 11 o'clock.
We'll do it at 11 o'clock.
You'll do it at 11 o'clock.
We'll break in.
And then put it up as a video that gets quoted. Then.
That's why I've hired a full-time news director.
Yeah.
Well, there's lots of journalists being laid off from lots of newspapers.
Yeah, they are cheaper than they used to be.
There's quite a market pool.
It's still challenging because, I mean, we're making the transition from being a podcast, little podcasts, to being a information network. That's expensive, as you know, to do it, especially without venture funding. So one of the stories Jessica had in the information, Google's latest takeover attempt for TV, Nexus TV. Google's tried, of course, with Google TV, and they've got the Chromecast, but the Nexus TV would be a set-top box. Amir Afradi actually writing this story in The Information.
What's the difference between that and Chromecast, then? Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not a set-top box. It's more like a Google TV, which is a set-top box. It's powered by Android. It has been designed to both be a television, you know, thing and a video game console for playing Android apps. So think Ouya. It might come with a separate touchpad remote control. The box, which doesn't carry live TV like a cable box does, may be controlled through a smartphone or tablet. This does sound a little bit like a high-end Chromecast and will be aggressively priced. This is a tough business. I mentioned the numbers. The number one product, the Apple TV, I'm sorry, I said 31 million. It's 13 million. I apologize.
Oh, it is. Oh, wow.
I reversed the numbers. 8 million for the Roku. The total for all of them is well under 30. So no wonder Apple calls that a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got the numbers reversed. I apologize. Yeah, 13 million is not like anything to go right home about. Did you guys read the Vanity Fair article about Marissa Meyer? I didn't.
No, I didn't.
I skimmed it.
Is it a hit piece? That's what some said.
I don't think it's a... Well, I wouldn't say it's a hit piece. I mean, it's not a sort of fawning, you know, she's the best thing that ever happened to a company piece. It's critical in some spots, particularly of her sort of personality.
They call her the arrogant, imperious...
Cold.
Mm-hmm. Others say best CEO I've ever worked for.
Yeah, you know? I mean, and a lot of that is, and the argument's made before, but I think it's true, it's sexist, that there are things said about her that wouldn't be said about men.
Yeah, sure. I mean, if a CEO, a male CEO is tough, cold, imperious.
She has to be tougher.
Right.
Yeah.
She has to be.
Yeah.
But if a man was as tough as she was, nobody would say... They would say he's good. He's aggressive. He's a tough CEO. That'd be good.
Right. It's all about how she makes people wait, you know, outside her office for appointments. Well, okay.
Guess what? Like, who's that boss?
You think Andy Grove didn't do that? Paul Avellini didn't do that? Larry Page doesn't do that?
There's no cookies and milk, and she doesn't. She doesn't give you a happy face on your, you know.
On your review.
Performance report.
Could she just please put a circle above her eyes? Just a little circle or dot. Maybe a heart once in a while.
She interrupts people.
Yeah. Oh.
So I got a question for you, Leo.
Yeah.
If you were Katie Couric's producer on Yahoo, what would you make news on Yahoo? Hmm.
The problem is Katie Couric has for years been pigeonholed in this soft feature news thing, right?
Right.
She's done some hard news.
Well, she was the anchor of CBC News. Sure, she has.
Yeah, but you know why they made her anchor? To soften the news.
Well, yeah, okay.
I don't know. You don't come from the Today Show and be seen as a hard-hitting journalist.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. Yeah.
So I don't know. And what she's done most recently is a daytime Gabfest.
Does it make sense to you, making her some sort of global anchor for Yahoo? Does that make sense to you?
Well, she's a name, and she's probably the best name they could get.
But what's she going to do?
Like, well, that's what Jeff's saying. What do you do with Katie Couric?
You come in the morning listen, and
let's
you
not
do
be cynical.
What?
Let's treat this. You know, as I said earlier today, I want to reinvent TV news because it needs reinventing. And I was asked by Weekend Edition to come on and talk about Katie Couric. So I decided to make it into my own agenda. My own agenda was: I hope Marissa is very smart. Katie's smart. They can break away from the stupid conventions of TV. They can reinvent what TV news is. So I still want to come back to the idea of what should it be? What could it be? Let's help them out.
Well, I think part of the problem is, and this is a really difficult one to solve, that it's still the person up on a stage.
Pedestal.
Addressing the crowd.
Agreed.
And I don't think that's what the internet era wants or needs. I think they want a conversation.
So
did
there's
you ever watch the stream?
One thing. Go ahead.
The morning stream?
Did you ever watch the stream on Al Jazeera?
No, I haven't.
I haven't watched it in a while, but I was on a few times, and it was trying to do a show, you know, informed by social media, informed by the audience, with bringing in members of the audience, Ahmed Shihad Eldin, I'm going to get his name wrong, but he's with Huffington Post Live now. He was a co-host, and they would bring in people who'd been commenting about a story as well as news clips. So they're trying to turn it into more of a social thing, which a lot of media and information is now, instead of just here's a clip with our guy standing in front of a building downtown.
Right.
Right.
And right. And you see the same thing with CNN. You saw, Shepard Smith with his big-ass tables. And the whole idea is let's get the Twitter feed involved.
Yeah, I think we got to cut down to the right fundamentals of what video can do well. This is, why I raise you. One thing that it can do is explain.
Yeah.
Another thing it can do is it can summarize.
Yeah.
What are the key attributes and advantages that video, whether it's broadcast on the internet or broadcast on the airwaves, what are the attributes of that one could capture and rethink rather than the stupid conventions of standing in front of the building that burned down 12 hours ago and nothing's happened?
Mm-hmm. But that's the hard part, is that a lot of stories, particularly some important stories, there aren't any visuals. There's just nothing visual about it.
No,
exactly. And that doesn't stop this.
Look at this. It's just a bunch of guys talking about stuff.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
I think that's what Katie, by the way, that's what Katie Couric should do. She should have conversations. And maybe it isn't bringing in the Twitterati. Maybe it's having conversations with people who knew Nelson Mandela or something. But that's what it should be, conversation. It shouldn't be declaiming.
And actually, Huffington Post Live does a good job with they use Google Hangouts. They'll have 5 or 6 people. They're all, in the Hangout. Admittedly, the technical quality is not great, but they at least bring in lots of voices instead of
I want to do more with that, actually.
The one person academic they can fly into the studio.
Right. It's challenging. I don't know what the answer is. Believe me, if I did, I'd be doing it. Somebody in the chat room, by the way, says, and I didn't know this, that Katie Couric's, it's RSX11M in our chat room, says, on the day of 9/11, Katie Couric's coverage was the best of all the mainstream media channels.
Katie's very smart.
Yeah, very this is not a reflection on her. And as she points out, it was the way she was managed. It could be the way the executives saw her, as opposed to what her capabilities were.
I just don't understand what Yahoo is going to do.
That's different.
And Jeff, your point is a good one. They need to reinvent the format somehow.
That's the opportunity. The worst thing that can happen, newspapers have been trying to mimic TV.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Let's have somebody sit there in front and tell you a story and go to video a lot. And and Scripps just bought a company called Newsy that does that tries to mimic television. Yeah. Let's stop that. There's nothing to mimic there. It's crap.
But this is very much a TV meme, a TV trope.
Yes.
We got cameras, angles, voices, table.
You added them on as they were valuable. If you go back to the cottage.
We didn't have a table,
Right. Well, you didn't have a lot of that. And so then you added them on as you felt they added value. And I'm fine with that. But doing them because big TV does them is not the reason to do them.
Yeah.
Holograms. That's the future.
Who do you ask? You ask the internet native, right? What do they want? Well, what do they do right now? They watch YouTube, but that's because they're so young.
I had Tim Pool. You know Tim Pool?
Mm-hmm.
Tim's the guy who live streamed Occupy Wall Street for 21 hours straight, and Vice very cleverly hired him. So I had him in my office, and I had him in class in my office. And I sat around and I said, what's the future of TV? I'm asking people this now. And his response was not to rethink the video screen. He thought what was around the video screen. He thought about the interactions of people about topics and a bunch of video streams of people who are witnesses to something, and then some structure where you kind of pull up the best or what's important into it.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't think that video was this isolated thing, this window you look through, that instead it was something that added to the notion of what we see on the web.
And that's exactly what the stream was trying to do, pulling in YouTube videos, pulling in eyewitness photos. It wasn't just Twitter chatter. It was trying to, in real time, sort of crowdsource the news instead of just picking one talking head and talking to them for 15 minutes and then going to commercial.
Can we even watch it anymore? Or is it on Al Jazeera English?
No, it's on at 7:30 Eastern.
Yeah, and I haven't watched it in a little while, but I thought they really did some interesting things, and it was much more open. You know, one of the criticisms of TV news is that it's the same talking heads, and it's the same format, and it's the same questions, and you get virtually zero out of it.
Well, here's the other thing about it, too. It's the same plastic voice. You know, what I love about the Twit Network is that, like it or hate it, man, I am what you're seeing. This is exactly what you get.
I am what I am.
It's not when I go on CNN, and you automatically go into, well, Howie,
right?
Voice, you know, and the thing I tell people about Leo all the time is that even though you have a radio voice, you're as nice as the radio voice. So it's really Leo.
You're very sweet.
Maybe you get more angry sometimes off the air than on. Hey, Chad, does he? But
I don't do it off the air. I mean, in fact, somebody tweeted me, boy, I wouldn't want to work for Leo Laporte. He is so mean to his employees after the show. And I said, hey, I am what I am. That's why we want you to watch it. I realized that this is a reality show. Yeah, it's real reality.
Because you break the wall,
that
right?
Human voice.
So maybe that's what you do. That's what you do with Katie Couric. You break the wall.
Yeah, break the wall, exactly.
Because you know what? I bet she's really likable.
Yeah.
She is.
So that's what you do.
And irreverent and things you can't be when you're reading a script.
Well, my God, Katie Couric, real? Wow. What would that be like?
And
the problem is with somebody like Katie Couric, who has so many years doing this, and
it's
so contained, it's very hard and scary and risky to be real.
Yeah. What did it take for you, though? You were on TV, too, and you're on radio.
I was lucky not so early, 10 or 15 years in my radio career, I had a program director who said, you're not genuine. And he said, go take improv classes. I want you to break it down.
Well,
I would have loved to
have seen that.
Yeah. Wow. And it was very good advice. I did all that. And because what he said is, I think, you know, and that is the advice I give to everybody who works with me. Here is what we're looking for is who is your real. See, people, they get on camera and they get lights on them and they get a microphone. They put on a mask. It's protective. So if you can get the mask off and be yourself, and then the problem is sometimes people won't like that person. Then you're out of luck.
I was going to say, some of those people who have masks, they're just unpleasant people.
Well, that's right. But then you're not going to be a star. Sorry. Yeah. You've got to get a real job.
Well, it's part of going back to Stern. It's metaphorically, it's Howard Stern's small penis, right?
He was genuine, and it was so refreshing. He was such a huge success because nobody on the radio was normal,
right?
No, that's a good point.
And nobody's willing to talk for endlessly about boring stuff or personal stuff, and he was, and that was refreshing. And I think that's where Katie Couric. If you could make her be like Howard Stern, just, you know, let it all hang out, Katie.
And if you look at the successes of even people like Anderson Cooper during sort of crisis events, one of the things that I think resonates with people is when they respond as human beings to those events.
Right. Which is very rare.
Mm-hmm.
But there are shows. You know, I for a long time I did Live with Kelly and Regis. They were very genuine on the air. A Daily Show does that. It's very hard. And I think maybe because of her Today Show experience, it wouldn't be so hard to do that. I think that's what she should. There you go. We got to your answer. Let it all hang out, Katie.
Well, I tweeted that I had done the weekend edition thing with this hope about Katie, and she tweeted back.
Really?
So, yeah. So
awesome. She's got some good handlers. Well, I'll tell you who else I would ask, and that's Alexis Ohanian. The creator of Reddit, he's got a new book called Without Their Permission, How the 21st Century Will Be Made, Not Managed. He will be our guest in just a few minutes.
Yeah,
say hello. Triangulation. He's great.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan.
Who isn't? There's an example of a guy everybody loves.
He gets sick of hearing this, I'm sure, but he's going to be president someday.
Oh, God, that would be good news.
He's a politician.
He is.
In a decent way.
Yeah.
Right? He has the charm.
He's a handshaker. Yeah.
Yeah, and he has a great smile and all that.
He is the mayor of the internet.
That's true. Yeah.
I'm the president, so I'm just saying I outrank him. But
Jeff is the conscience.
I think more people know who he is and know who I am. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get our tip tool number of the week. Anything else you want to contribute as well? It's so good to have Matthew Ingram here from GigaOhm.com. Jeff Jarvis from BuzzMachine.com. Our show today brought to you by Bill Harris. You may know that name. He was the CEO of PayPal, then Intuit. And while he was at Intuit, I think he learned a little bit about what people want from financial software. When I remember very well, the very first program I ever typed in on my Atari 800 was a checkbook balancing program. That was one of the number one things people wanted to do with a computer. And I had Intuit, or Quicken, I guess, and I had Microsoft Money. And I remember, you know, I'd get my bank statement, I'd go through it, enter everything in. You don't have to do that anymore. And Personal Capital, which is Bill's startup, really is a great example. Personal Capital takes all your financial, you give it the information, it keeps track of all of your complex financial life. Everything that you're trying to keep track of in an easy to understand financial dashboard. The irony of it is that as your financial life progresses, the more you make, the more complicated it is to manage. You've got accounts everywhere, checking and savings and retirement and credit and investment. I want you to visit personalcapital.com. Take a look around and then go to personalcapital.com/twig, T-W-I-G. This is free, by the way. And what it'll do is it'll give you the complete picture of how your finances are, a real-time snapshot of everything, all the charts, the graphs, the reports, the whole story. It's like having a financial GPS at your fingertips. And then you can make investment decisions, intelligent investment decisions. It's your next generation financial advisor. Goal-based, diversified, unbiased financial advice. Free from personalcapital.com. Try it right now. personalcapital.com/twig. The only reason you need to go there is just so that you let them know you heard it on This Week in Google, and I would appreciate it if you did. personalcapital.com/twig. They have desktop, they have mobile apps, and you'll get great financial advisory services. Let us see. Normally, we would have Gina Trapani. She didn't. We don't have the change log. I can mention a couple of things, you know, that have changed. For instance, Harry McCracken was all excited because finally you have offline editing on Google Spreadsheets. Offline. Unfortunately, you have to create new spreadsheets to use it. It won't work with the old ones. That's good. Google Glass Explorer Edition owners are now getting to upgrade their eyewear.
I got my notification, so I'm now in line. Yeah, then awesome. They say straight out, you know, you don't have to, but we think you should.
Because you're going to get music, you're going to have stereo, or
also,
at least
most for me. I found them unusable. I will be able to spend even more money on them and get prescription lenses.
Prescription. So that's right. Part of it. Awesome.
So you have to get the prescription lenses separately?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Of course,
and I
you
have
do.
These ridiculous Verilux wildly
very expensive
lenses.
Yeah, God, yeah, no. Yeah. No, it's horrible. Dell releases a 11-inch Chromebook, the first Chromebook from Dell, and it's aimed specifically at education.
They added in their own cloud thing.
Pocket Cloud. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. The other great Chromebook that's out that is almost perfect is the Asus 720p because it's got a touchscreen. But it's still 2 gigs. Minimum for me in a Chromebook is 4 gigs, unless the software's changed markedly. Because too many tabs and it craps out.
Right.
I had my beloved Pixel, which I'm not using right now, but my Pixel's right next to me. And it has this odd bug that came in the last few weeks where somewhere in the middle of a video, it'll start making an out-of-phase scratchy sound. Like part of the audio is a second later. So I had a great call with support, really nice guy. He said, you know, unlike Dell, we don't have any time quotas or anything like that. We chatted it through. We did some stuff together. Unfortunately, I had to go through a little more fixing with another guy, but then they're going to send me a new Chromebook Pixel.
How exciting. Boom. Yeah. Yay. The Dell does have a 4 gig option, apparently.
Yeah, it starts with 4 gig in their machine, which is good.
Good.
I think for those who want to buy Chromebooks, you know, buy it for grandma. 2 gigs is fine. But if you're going to do more than n number of tabs, you want 4 gigs. And I saw a video of somebody who had upgraded one of the Asus machines to 10 gigs, and it was just smooth as hell.
Really?
Like crazy. Yeah.
You can put 10 gigs in one of those things?
One of them, yeah.
Wow.
Holy cow.
That's crazy. That's crazy,
it
Tom.
It is, isn't it? In a Chromebook, yeah.
But there are 12 days, 10 hours, 24 minutes, and 14 seconds to Christmas. I know that because Google's Santa Tracker is back. This isn't the one where I wrote a letter to Santa and he wrote me one
that's
back.
Right.
And,
that's right.
Yeah. There's no help from NORAD this year.
No.
Unfortunately, they're...
They've broken up.
I guess NORAD's still going to do its Santa Tracker, though, right? It's going to do the Bing Santa Tracker? Oh, please say no.
Yep.
Is it?
Yep.
It's Bing?
Mm-hmm. NORAD got scroogled.
Is NORAD going to the highest bidder? Is that how far we've come? That's sad.
Got to pay the bills.
Microsoft outbid Google on the Santa tracker. Google does have a neat advent calendar, which is kind of fun. You click, you go through as you get closer and closer. And
those negotiations would have been fun, hey, with NORAD and Santa.
I want Santa. No, you can't have him.
Was Santa involved or?
Mrs. Claus, she does all the negotiations. She's much tougher than Santa. Yeah. Santa's a pushover. Oh, I could do something here. All right. Apparently I should. Oh, it's a candy cane. Whoa. A candy cane machine. Whoa.
That's no candy crush.
Wow. I guess I'll keep playing this until I get bored. Jeff, do you have a number of the week?
kind of. You mentioned before that Chromecast is Time's top gadget. CNET has the top 100 gadgets, and Google has two of the five top spots with the Nexus 5 and the Nexus 7, which I endorse fully.
Yeah, that's the 5 is what you're using.
5 is what I'm using and loving it. Son Jake is looking to get the X, which I think I endorse. I think it's a very good.
I love the X. And look at the G, too. The Moto G is pretty.
G's pretty amazing. You know, who would have thought that Google would become a major hardware company?
My daughter just got the X.
Yeah, I love it. I'm surprised.
She loves it.
Yeah, it's not exactly a high-spec phone, but I just think it's really great.
She was an iPhone user, and she threw out the iPhone, and now she's all Moto X.
Wow.
Yeah, Jake refuses to go to iOS 7. He won't do it, so he's going to switch to Android.
I don't blame him. It's Iggy.
Yeah, I don't and like
while
it
while we're at it, while we're talking about that, what was it here? There's a new Sony Z Ultra Pure Android Edition coming out for, I think, $650. That's a 6.5-inch, I think, or 6-inch phone.
Those Xperias are nice.
A white Nexus 7 is out, and a play edition of the LG G-Pad 8.3. So while we're on Google gadgets.
I don't think you can solve this one. Chad, I need some help on this one. I'm stuck on the candy canes. Uh-oh. This is... How do I solve this?
Can you click that middle one?
Because
it has like a little. Oh, click the middle one because it has like a little thing.
There you go. That's it. That's all.
It's all inertia. Oh, no. Oh, no. I admit it gets a little harder.
Gamecheats.com.
Yes, probably. Gamecheats.com would have all of this.
There's a video of how to do
it. Is there really?
No, I'm just.
Oh, you can't do that.
10 minutes from now, there'll be a video.
Go the other way.
No, you can't. There you go.
Listening on audio,
this
isn't nearly as compelling as it sounds.
Number 9.
Did you have a number? I forgot.
I already did.
Okay. I was busy. I wasn't paying attention, I confess. Matthew Ingram, any tip or tool you'd like to mention before we wrap this sucker up?
I don't have any tips or tools, but this is going to sound
Matthew,
kind of
you
funny.
You came in at the last minute to rescue us, and we're glad. So
yeah, that was a big one. Yeah,
but I do have one thing that I wanted to mention that I wrote about. This is going to seem weird because it's not a tip or a tool. It doesn't involve
something
Google
you wrote about counts.
It involves Twitter, but it's a shepherd. So a sheep farmer in the Lake District in Britain has a Twitter account that you should follow because it's awesome. It doesn't sound like the kind of thing you would want to follow.
But what is the account?
It's Herdy Shepherd 1.
H-E-R-D-Y?
Yeah.
S-H-E-P-H-E-R-D and the number 1?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's an anonymous account, so you don't know who it is. He wrote a great post about how he was hugely skeptical of Twitter because he's kind of a Luddite and, you know, his lifestyle and his work goes back centuries, hasn't changed in centuries. But he really took to it and he shares a lot of photos that are just fascinating and it's strangely compelling. So it's as completely kind of the other end of the spectrum as you could imagine from sort of tech and Silicon Valley and so on. But he's really got away with, just sort of giving you a snapshot of his life and what it's like. Anyway, kind of strange, but I really enjoy it.
Well, if you're going to do that, I'm going to do Stephen Cron, who is drawing underscore daily. He does, if you follow him, he'll draw you as a monster.
I like that.
Disclaimer, monsters may vary in quality and monsterness. So if you read his tweets, whenever anybody follows him, he draws a little monster for that person.
That's great.
So the poor guy is going to now be flooded.
That's great.
But isn't that cute?
Yeah.
It isn't amazing that even after all these years, there's still new and original stuff on Twitter.
Well, that's why I wrote about it, because he was so new to it, and he was so not interested in that type of stuff. But he got an iPhone, and he said, now I have the ability to take pictures and share my lifestyle with people. And he's had a huge response. He's got tens of thousands of followers.
It's so cool.
Fascinating.
While we're doing this, my favorite is Nine Quarterly, NEIN Quarterly.
Oh, yeah. I saw you tweet that the other day.
He is brilliant. And he just does things as a nasty German.
Nine!
He's actually a German professor. But he'll come up with these. Let me see if I can find one off.
He says a compendium of utopian negation.
Yeah.
Nine. Person of the year. Nine.
It's pretty great, actually.
Maybe this is not the God and the pipe is dead. I was told this is a fake because it's too true.
Really good.
Love it.
There's another one called Kim Kierkegaard Dashian. So it's Kim Kardashian mixed with Kierkegaard. And I highly recommend that one, too.
Kim Kierkegaardashian.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you could figure out how to spell that, you should follow it, because then you're the right person. And by the way, Professor Jeff Jarvis tweeted about Kim Kierkegaard.
Oh, it's Kim Kierkegaard, at Kim Kierkegaard.
At Kim Kierkegaard, yes.
Yeah, brilliant.
Apparently, there are other related philosopher-celebrity Twitter mashups.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know, this would be a new segment on the show, our Twitter personality of the week.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's a good one.
I follow, as I think a number of people do, a couple of those special Twitter accounts that will direct message you if you follow them.
Like Magic Rex.
So forth.
Yeah.
And one of them was a little odd, and I still haven't received any
was
tweets.
Was it Magic Sext?
It was Magic Sext. And the idea was it would send you a sext every once in a while. I'm waiting. I don't know if it was a hoax or not.
That doesn't sound official. I'm just reaching here, but that does not sound official. Magic Pix was kind of weird because it just randomly tweeted weird photos, and it wasn't clear why.
Right. It's the e-horse book of... But that one from Twitter? Because I know Magic Rex is from Twitter.
Magic Pix is not.
Yeah, see, that's what you... What you
and so then now they have a problem. Every magic this or that, people are going to think it's official.
Twitter has also Event Parrot, which is an official Twitter experiment that gives you breaking news.
Which is odd in a way because it doesn't... Some things don't come up that you think would.
Yeah, right.
And then you get alerts about other things that are... So they must
I find Mike Elgin, your new news director, to be more of a news junkie.
I just went on to Google Plus,
and there he is reporting the news that there's an air conditioning cooling system fail on the space station.
Oh.
That's how I found out about it. It was Mike Elgin.
Yeah, Mike is the is going to take over our news operation at the beginning of the year, and that's one of the steps we're taking to getting some original news. Yeah, you know of him, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I've followed him for a while.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He's got a huge Google Plus following, doesn't he?
Yeah,
But
he was, his former editor-in-chief of, I don't want to say the wrong magazine, one of the PC magazines.
A
PC magazine.
Yeah.
And has been around, I've known him for years. But what I like about him is he's another guy who's embraced new media. He abandoned his blog for Google Plus.
Yeah.
And I think that's exciting. I think it was it? I don't remember the name of the magazine. I apologize. Mike will actually be joining us right after a triangulation for a special inside twit. We're going to introduce him. Hey, I want to thank you guys for being here. Jeff Jarvis. Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
City University of New York. Matthew
Chad
Ingram. Giga
cat.
Home. And Whiskers, my little cat friend.
You're not fooling me anymore, Chad. I got it now.
Perhaps the Shutterstock watermark gave it away.
Yeah.
Matthew briefly mentioned holograms, and so I had this cat ready just in case.
He's got Jessica yelling, and we got mittens.
He never brought it back up again, and I was really sad. So I wanted to throw it in right at the end.
Pretty damn cool how it really looks like it's on the table.
How do you watermark a cat? That's got to be complicated.
It's not easy.
I'll show you how. Shut up, stuck in it.
Oh, okay. I thought it was actually tattooed on the cat.
Wouldn't that be cool?
That would take some doing.
PC World, thank you. Was the magazine. He's also currently at Computer World. He likes
and Mike
the worlds.
Mike will be on this show next week, we think.
He will join us next week. We're going to get him on Twitter as well this weekend. We're trying to, you know, introduce him to our audience all around. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Matthew. Thank you all for being here. We do This Week in Google 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Wednesdays. That's 2100 UTC on twit.tv if you want to join us live. I love it. But if you can't, on-demand audio and video always available, as with all our shows. After the fact, you could choose the quality and the size you want at twit.tv/twig, T-W-I-G, or just, you know, search for Twig on iTunes or wherever you get your netcasts. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next week on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.